You're listening to Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast that explores the world of K-12 education as it intersects with the Christian faith. You might call us extreme moderates. We're skeptics who try not to be cynics and are allergic to cheap rhetoric. Welcome to the show.
Well, here we are back, episode 21 of Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, and Riley and I are delighted to have another one of our colleagues, Ron Maitland, a new addition to our staff team this year here in the high school, and what a great addition he is. I'm gonna let you tell a little bit about yourself. So, Ron, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about what you teach, what your passions are, and welcome here.
Thank you for having me. I'm here to respond to Irv Duick.
Yes. A rebuttal?
A rebuttal. Not really.
And we are more than happy to provide that platform for you. It's about time someone said
something. No, thank you, Riley Duick and Dave McFarland. Mr. Duick actually was tremendous in how he welcomed me the first time. He just let me know straight up. He's like, if you need anything, let me know because I can't read your mind. And then he walked off. But it's funny. On the way in here just now, he just hugged me and told me, I love you. So
blunt but hospitable.
That's right. My background is I was born in the Caribbean to a pastor dad and teacher mom, both of who gone on to do their PhD. Lots of education in my household. And there's lots I could say about that, but I remember a big moment for me was when we lost our brother. I lost my brother when I was 12, and made me scared to be married, made me scared to commit to people, made me scared of love and anything to do with family. And I was on my path to just say, you know what, I'm going to go into law, and I am not going to commit to anybody. I'm just going to put my head down. And it wasn't until a mentor came into my life, and he says, it's fine for you to be single, nothing wrong with that, but fear and avoidance is no way to live your life. So you choose what you want to do based on your values and based on the vision and based on, you know, where you want to go. And it opened me up. And so I'm married to a wonderful woman who I'm hoping she'll listen to this. Natasha, I love you. And my son Preston, he's in grade 6, and Ellison, grade 4.
Yeah, I actually, well, because we're all at the school that we teach at, Preston is someone I see very frequently being in the classroom just across the hall from me.
Yeah. So it's cool. I teach English and socials here, and I'm passionate about lots of things. I started listing some things off, and I'm like, how much time do we have? Nice. But anything from leadership development, social entrepreneurship, communication, mentorship, worship, music, creativity, fashion, all that stuff is not just passionate. A lot of those things I'm very heavily involved in outside of the school we teach at.
Yeah. I love the through line that social studies actually is able to be for a lot of those things that you mentioned. I've just casually observed, never done anything formal, but working together, like we worked on, brought you into social studies 11, but just even observing casually your classroom and the space that you've carved out for students, I see a whole bunch of those things happening, or at least being alluded to, and you've brought your passions, but you've brought your whole self here. And that's really important as an educator, not just a Christian educator, but there's something there. So you've alluded a little bit to faith, alluded a little bit to vision and to values, and so that kind of leads us into the second question about you've had some involvement before in Christian education, and then I know you mentioned to me you were outside of that. Maybe tell a little bit about the conscious choice to pursue other things, and then you've made a return. So maybe with that as a starter, you've used the word intentional. You've been very intentional about those things. So maybe take it from there and tell us about that those transitions in your life.
Yeah, I started teaching. 26 years ago. And my first 3 years were teaching at a Christian high school in Aldergrove. And after 3 years, a few things happened. But the main thing that happened was I really felt like growing up in the Christian bubble. Can we say that word? The Christian bubble. I my whole life was involved in church and church activities, church school, everything. And to know what was going on the outside of it, I really felt I wanted to do that. So I intentionally left. There were no issues or anything like that. I just said, I want to see what's going on. And not just see. I actually was part of something that said a contagious Christian course. And it talked about just salt and light. And it reminded me of that Matthew 5 that talks about the salt and light. You are the salt of the earth. And whatever that is, light, salt, light, that whole thing.
All true.
That whole deal. Yeah. And it just said you need to be around different kinds of people. Yeah. And I said, I want to expand my world. So I went downtown and taught in a university pathway program at the largest language school down there for the last 23 years. And it was incredible for me to be around, to be surrounded with so many people that didn't believe the same as I believed. For the first time in my life, really and truly. It was a massive eye opener, but it kept me on my knees. It kept me on my toes. I felt like I knew nothing. Constantly, I constantly was able to listen to people from all over the world. Some of the people at some of the top companies that you and I know about, and they would come here, and they were challenging, and they were upfront, and they had a limited timeline. But I moved back. I moved back here for a specific reason too, because after 23 years of doing that, I say this with great clarity, with great confidence. I believe that God called me. And I don't say that lightly. To come back and say, okay, let's take all of those experiences that you've had out there, and now let's bring that back to raise, train, develop, and join a team of people that are developing an army of change makers that will change the world. That can join God in this story, this story of God, of restoring creation, fall, redemption, restoration. If in fact the story is, in the beginning God created the world perfect, and the fall we messed it up, if I could say it that way, and then redemption, Jesus came and died and rose again, restoration, we get to join this God in making all things new the way that he wanted. Just out of a loving relationship with him. He's the one that's doing everything, and we just get to join him in that. Oh, I couldn't believe how my heart beat fast as I started seeing so many people in this environment embracing that mindset.
Well, when I first met you, Ron, it was last summer, and I was getting you some resources here. I remember we met at the school and was hooking you up with some resources. And it was exactly the type of thing you just mentioned now about joining God in his in his work and participating in. And I realized that you and I we were on the same page, speaking the same language. I know, like, for example, there's been some pushback too, which is always a healthy thing.
Yeah.
That language of change maker, I'm thinking back to some of my own work in history and our relative insignificance in history.
Right.
And I'm a little bit allergic to this idea of you're going to go out there and change the world. So even as we might, you know, we could sort of parse our words on that.
Sure.
It's the bigger part of it is the joining God in what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I love what you just said about not taking it lightly. You say the sense of God calling you.
Yes.
And not taking that lightly, because we can be so flippant, I think, in how we use that, or we create a, this is one of the things that we're a little, you know, Riley and I in the podcast and the conversations we've had is some skepticism around just some of the cheap rhetoric or the language that we throw around.
Yeah.
You talked about the bubble, you know, this, you're of this as well. So I so appreciate, you're highly attuned and attentive to that.
I appreciate that. You know, it's being out there. There's so many different things. As I've had some amazing people, like the two people sitting across from me right now, and so many others, just have come into my life to help me grow. And the idea of saying, you know what does it look like to really take this life in such a way, this story that we're in, with a higher degree of intentionality, as we just talked about? What does it look like to say, okay, it's not my job, it's God that's doing everything? What does it look like? I've had a chance, and I don't know how much of this will end up in the end here, but I've had the great fortune of being around some amazing people, and that includes many things, but part of it includes working. I was a judge for the Juno Awards for a couple of years. There's a few TEDx Talks speakers that I've had a chance to be a part of coaching and mentoring. One of my good friends is involved, is the owner of Vancouver Fashion Week. And being involved in some of those things and some others, working with some Grammy winners, some of them are connected to the school we work at.
You figured out our...
There's a few different things. This idea of going, you know what? It's one thing to talk about what it means, what it means to have a faith. It's another thing for us to say, okay, what does it look like to just saying, okay, how can we join this God that we serve in just loving people and loving, really just loving people and bringing His love and light into every environment which we're in.
To ask you,
I've got a lot more to say about that.
If you just continue to elaborate, because I feel like I'm learning as well as you share about what you've learned about this return to Christian ed and specifically here at the school that we work.
I love it. The school we work at, that's a way to say it. As a couple things. One is this site, I realize. I'll speak for myself. I thought I would be able to move back into the Christian environment, so to speak, and it would be a simple thing. It would be like, okay, let's go. Let's all get on. I'll say it this way. I realized that the pressure that the world, and when I say the world, I'm not speaking about the secular world. I'm just speaking about our society places on us to be a certain thing, to get a certain level of grade, to walk a certain way, to act in a certain way. Like that pressure is tremendously crushing for so many people, myself included. And I didn't realize just how strong it was, so much so that when we say, okay, let's what does it mean to look beyond just what my parents ask or want of me? What does it mean to actually say, what has God put inside of me? Or what is it that I'm passionate about? Or what's my purpose? Or what areas do I feel I want to make a difference in? What people do I want to impact? That some of those questions are not questions that are often asked in many of the environments in which we inhabit. Because there's just a pressure to get a certain grade or to make a dollar or to conform to a certain standard. And that idea of saying, okay, what is actually on my heart? What is true for me? What does it mean to actually live out of passion and purpose? What does it mean to actually say, okay, who do I want to help? Like those kinds of questions, whether it's in our environment or in other environments, I don't see that being a driver of how we act every day. And so one of the things that I've learned being here is just the importance of it, because I came back because I wanted to see a generation of people that specifically would focus in on saying the God of the universe has not just save me from something, but save me to something. The God of the universe that loves me is one that there's a presence and power that I get to walk in, and I get to bring that into every environment I'm in.
Could I just speak to that? I thoroughly resonate with that, because something throughout my deconstruction, just through my faith, has been coming to terms with the idea or the question asking, is Christianity more to die for than it is to live for? Because some people will say that, well, your heaven evacuation plan is really just a time. It's a timer, right? Waiting to go off. Or if you have rapture theology, when you're going to be literally taken away. Where if we have this idea of restoration in the kingdom and how we play a role, we partner with the Spirit in that, Christianity is everything to live for. Yeah. And I think you'd agree. So I thoroughly resonate. Thank you.
Well, it's funny because I grew up with an amazing father who I grew up in an environment where we'd have 1, 2, 3, 4 hour baptisms. Hundreds of people being baptized. Like,
how long were they holding them down for? My days. Just sinful.
Long time. Yeah, the environment I grew up in, I was used to that. Seeing 4 hour baptisms, yeah. Take me to the water, over and over again, and it was great. But I don't know how is it I missed this. I missed the idea of what you just said. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I call you Riley or Mr. DeWitt. I missed that. It was only I went to a Catalyst event in Atlanta. I actually meant to say this near the beginning of this podcast. I went to a Catalyst event in Atlanta a few years ago, just a handful of years ago. And I sat in 3 rows back with my mouth open the entire time. Right? 14,000 leaders from all over the world were there. It was John Maxwell that owns the event, and it was for people age 40 and under. I was 41, so I kind of snuck in there. And I just remember hearing what you just said. Literally, it felt like for the first time, the idea of restoration, the idea is that if you ask people, what's the gospel? And the idea of not just sin and redemption, but actually it started in the Garden of Eden, shalom, wholeness, purity, purpose. And yes, fall, then redemption. And now we're in restoration. So it's not about just simply church. It's about kingdom. It's not just about going to church on a weekend, but it's about these 7 channels of cultural influence and media and arts and business. And what does it look like then to say, okay, I'm not just trying to get a grade. We're not just preparing people so they can go to university. But after that, what does it look like to actually be a part of a movement that has gone on for centuries, that is continuing to actually bring love, light, and wholeness the way that we as human beings are designed to? What does it mean to be fully human, and how do we join God in all the spheres of culture to actually join in what he's already doing by the power of the Holy Spirit? What does that look like?
Yeah, and Dave and I were just a part of a Faith and Learning conversation just last Friday. And in that conversation, I left really mulling over the thought that faith and learning really comes down to not what do we want our students to know. Mm. Like, there were other conversations. Like, we had a group that was looking at science, and they were looking at math, and we were talking about the transition from middle school to high school, and like, what is it? And a lot of that is like, well, what do we want our students to be able to do by the time they get between grade 8 and 9, or to know by the time we get to between 8 and 9? But faith and learning is all about who do we want these students to be?
Yes,
and the depth of that, and we kind of, I feel like we left the conversation. Well, I don't know about you, Dave, but I left the conversation still feeling like a little bit like I was still wrestling with so much of that stuff, because the depth of that question and the depth of our role in so much of what you've described is really, I can't even think of an adjective to describe. It's so, the calling is high, and the beings were meant to be or that were called to teach. It's just so deep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was challenged by one of my mentors. He said, if you had 3 minutes and you knew after that you're going to die, what would you tell your kids? Like, what would you tell your kids? And it literally, because in that moment, everything that you think, all our theories, our philosophies come down to like that moment, right? What would you tell your kids? And it's been what I'm going to say next. I've had a chance to say it, not just to them, but I've shared this with different audiences with my kids in the front row. So it's very humbling. This idea of saying, okay, at this moment, I might change later. I don't think so, but I would tell them that story we're in. If I had 3 minutes to speak to my kids, I would remind them of the story that we're in, that this creation, fall, redemption, restoration, and that we're in restoration time, and the God of the universe, this Jesus that came, died, and rose again, we get to join by the power of the Holy Spirit with that Jesus in making the world, in joining, in loving this world and loving people through these different spheres of influence. And we get to hear and live by that power and that presence. And kids, the idea of living that way is something that we all have an opportunity to live into. Because of that, I had another mentor of mine, and his kids actually go here at the school we're at. He challenged me to do something. I started meeting with him regularly. He challenged me to do something I started just about 3 years ago. I'd never done this before. Mm-hmm. And for people that are listening, maybe a lot of them do this, but I hadn't. He said, tell me about your time with like your prayer life. Tell me about that. What do when you journal or you talk to God, what usually happens? Is it usually you talking, or do you ever do any listening? And I go, listening. I'm like, it's me talking. This is what I want. You know, help my class go well today. Help things in my business to work well. Hit different. Like I have all these requests and these different things. He says, why don't you try this? Why don't you just try saying, putting your name, Ron, comma, at the top of the page, the date, and then just listening and then writing down what you hear God saying. I couldn't believe I'd never tried that before. I got to, my 40s and I'd never, ever done that. So I started doing that. And here's what happened on day one. I was on the SkyTrain. This is when I used to go downtown. I was on the SkyTrain, and there were tons of people around. And so I go, okay, I'll try this thing. So I start working on it. I write Ron, comma. And then I could hear a lady beside me. I hear her saying, I won't be coming into work today because my child was sick all night. He has asthma. And we were in an emergency room with him, so we won't be going to work today. He won't be coming into school. And I remember thinking, I have asthma. My son has asthma. I could do some. I could tell her something. And so I literally said, no, I'm not gonna say anything. It's crowded SkyTrain. I don't want to be that guy that's like, bullhorn guy. Yeah, exactly. Turn or burn. Right? I didn't want to be that. And so I was just going to leave it. And this is what I heard. Ron, will you speak with her? And I said, no. He says, okay, well then you can just give advice, Ron. I know you like to do that. You can just give advice. But why do you think that I put her right next to you on this first time that you're trying this new way of listening to me? Could it be that I have you here for a reason? And I'm going to cut the story short. I turned to her. I said, does your son have asthma? And she said, yes. I said, my son has asthma too, and so do I. Do you mind if I pray for you? And I've never done anything like this before. I said, you mind if I pray for you? And she turned to me and she said, that'll be fine. I started praying for her. By the end of the ride, the SkyTrain ride, she was crying. I was close to tears. And as she got off the SkyTrain, she said, I needed that. Thank you. And then as she walked up the escalator, as she walked up the stairs, here's what I heard. Ron, you needed that. That was for you. You needed to know about my power, my presence. That was the first time that, and that's just 3 years ago. That's the first time that this kind of new way of living with this presence and power kind of started for me in a fresh way. And I know people have been doing this for a long time, but for me, this idea of helping all of us to live with that presence and power, especially like the students in this next generation, that's my heart. That's what I long for. And I know it's the heart of many people here as well.
mentioned before being in that Catalyst conference and third row back, mouth open the whole time. We can't manufacture that level of jaw-dropping, like, oh my goodness, moments in our classrooms all the time. And those of us who try to do that will burn out, or it's inauthentic. But I want to connect that to the language of invitation and participation with God.
Yeah.
One of the things that has been a bit of a recurring theme on our podcast and in conversation with students and alumni and Riley and I just yakking into the microphones has been around student chapels and our chapel ministry. And so I'm wondering if you could maybe tell us a little bit about both your experience. You've sort of a fresh set of eyes with your own story, this wonderful story of purpose and meaningful connection and a sense of feeling that you're called here.
Yeah.
And if we want to flip it around, we could say, you know, you needed this, we needed you, like in that sense of having you in our community. And in your first year, you've also been involved in the chapel. You've not just been experiencing them, you've actually participated in some meaningful ways. So maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I just talked to one of the guys outside at the school we work at, and I just shared with him the chapel that you had a couple of weeks ago was my favorite chapel that we've been. So maybe describing that a little bit, the idea of it was about encouragement. And that one where they had where one of the students actually just shared really authentically about their life. One of the joys that I know that many of us listening to this podcast and you guys in the room really share is the when someone makes a breakthrough and they share authentically, this is what's going on, this is what's true for me. And to watch that young man get up and share just about kind of what he went through and what he's been going through, just and to share that with his peers. To watch that courage, and then to see after that, they had a nice off where the people were like competing to say nice things to each other and just encourage and lift people up. I mean, I know on InstaSnap we have no challenge kind of taking shots at people on social media, but to say what does it mean to actually see the good and the beautiful and the whole and the pure. And I know Riley, you and I were at an event where they kind of talked a little bit about that and talk about speaking in to people and saying the beauty I see in you or the good I see in you is, you know, or I see in you conversation.
For the goodness of the kingdom as well, like seeing your skills and encouraging you, you're the piece in this part of the puzzle, like working with that.
Beautiful. That's right. That's right. And to share that and to call that out and what the research actually shows about the future, because we're so many people in the transition, as we all know, once they leave, you know, the schools that we're all at or many of us are at, and what happens in that transition, the key, that 1 week, the week after they first get to that new campus, how critical that first 7 days is. And our role as mentors and connecting them in meaningful ways and building our networks in such a way that we can build those relationships are such a critical piece. And what the research is showing in that new study called Regenerating Faith, I think it is, or
Renegotiating
faith. Yeah, thank you. And how important it is to have these I see in you conversations, like you said, for the good of the kingdom. Sometimes it's the first time where we can say, you know what, I see leadership in you. I see courage. I see you are a person that brings hope. I saw when, you know, that person made the comment and you were still willing and able to still stay at that table, and you stood up in a loving way, or you went out of your way to speak to that individual, that other individual that didn't, that was on the margins, maybe not as popular, whatever the case is. And so these encouraging things, it was so beautiful to see in this chapel where one of the teachers modeled encouraging. And then they literally stood up and said, and they started calling the names of different students and teachers and saying, here's a beauty I see in you. Here's what I see in you. And just what a beautiful thing that was. And then had us in a very tangible, practical way in this chapel. He said, why don't you take some time and actually encourage someone right now? Get your phones out and send a text message or make a phone call and actually send a text message to somebody and encourage them. Just a tangible way of making things work. That was such a beautiful, it was my favorite chapel where we actually practically did something that actually joined God to make the kingdom a better place. And it was practice for a way in which we can engage our world that applies in every environment we're in.
Yeah, I love the word model that you use. Like that's a pedagogy word in a lot of ways, right? The teacher will model and I'll do and now we'll do together so that you can do on your own. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I feel that there's talk about like faith learning in a lot of ways. I like that. But I was also what was I going to say about? I also resonate with the idea that here we have a teacher who's essentially willing to show and to say here's how we do things or here's what it means to partake in the kingdom through encouragement. I just can't help but hear, come follow me. I'm going to show you how to be fishers of people. And that's so much of what our role here is as a teacher in Christian ed as well. Like sometimes we say like, well, why are we taking students to go on outreach or to work with the homeless and stuff like that? You're just like making them do a bunch of things in the hopes that they'll be Christian. But I see this idea that we're modeling this beckoning where Jesus is saying, come follow me. Like I want to apprentice you, and this is what the kingdom looks like. Yeah. So I love that.
Yeah. Well, the idea of the school we're at and the focus on outreach, and even we use that word outreach and we talk about it as people being going to another place completely different from the environment that you're currently in. But the idea of saying, you know what, and we all know this, I believe, that the idea that we get to join God in every environment we're in. So we get to go to a Starbucks in our local area, that we're joining God in that moment, that we're joining God when we're at the hockey game, that we get to join God when we're in business, we get to join God when we're in the science lab, on the SkyTrain, wherever we are. We're constantly in an opportunity to join God and bring His love, light, and wholeness. That is something that we all long for, because in that moment we are fully human. In that moment we are fully bringing all of ourselves as we are designed to be, and that is such an exciting thing for me. And it took me so long to start realizing what I just said. So long to start realizing that, and I feel I'm still learning that from people around here at the school we're at, from my own students who constantly. There's so much that they have so much coming at them right now. And every day you and I are learning about kind of what's going on in the world, what's going on social media, what's going on just out there from them.
As social studies teachers, one of the things I love is so much of our quote prep is staying on top of what's happening, scrolling through timelines, what's happening in the world. It's wonderful. It's like, no, this is actually part of my work, part of my labor to be connected and then to do that exactly as we're saying, to model. Just one other part on that question about chapel is you've had opportunity to actually be involved. I know I've sat at a couple table sessions with some of our chapel leadership team, and you've been present in the front of some of our chapels. How did that come about? Besides the obvious part that you're a very passionate and vocal teacher, how did that come about?
Again, and I always feel a little bit awkward talking about some of the things that I've been involved in, but I had to have an opportunity. Just a few years ago, I didn't know anything about the whole idea of chapel worship, really. Yeah. That word worship was a foreign word to me, and then at the church, anyway, I was asked to be involved in worship. And so, like many of us that are teachers, the thing that we love learning. So I decided I'm going to start learning about what this thing is. So I went to a bunch of conferences and I started really getting out there. Fortunate enough to have mentors talk with me about not just going for the information, but going for the relationships and becoming friends and with the people that are leading, with the people beside you. And so I had an opportunity to be a lot of the songs we sing. If you think of, I don't know if I say some names.
You can name names.
right? So a lot of the songs that we sing today, I'm listening to Hillsong's latest album right now, People, which they say may be their last album. We'll see. And I had a chance to see Hillsong when they came for the first time and talk with them and Matt Redman and Chris, just on and on and on. And had a chance not just to speak with them, but be trained by them, have sit-down conversations. And that's gone on for many years now. And so part of my background is really being developed by in that area of worship by many of the people who write and lead the songs that many of us sing in our churches and in the Christian world, if I could say it that way. So that's kind of my background. And so because of that, I was involved in many some. At my church right now, we're doing something called Worship Academy, where we're bringing people from all over to be a part of just helping. What does it mean to be involved in bringing, you know, worship? I mean, no, worship and music are different. Mm-hmm. What does it mean when it comes to our worship gatherings? What does that look like? And so, yeah, planning our worship gatherings with you, Dave, has been an incredible experience. And I remember the last one we talked about, just really helping people not just learn about God, but experience God. And what does it look like for people to experience God corporately? And to bring that to the table, what does it look like for us to, if this resurrection story that Irv Duick talked about when he was here, if this is true, and that God is really inside of us, what does it look like to walk through life? What does it look like to walk through chapel? What does it look like to walk through my home? What does it look like on the playground? What does it look like to actually live that way with that sense of presence and power? What does it look like to do that? And so what if chapel became not just something where we sat and spectated, but it was something that all of us just really experienced the glory and the goodness of God together, and it was just one more expression of something that we get to do in every environment. And I think that was the heart behind the planning of it and why we said, let's just pull people on the stage. And we just sat around, stripped back, and with a guitar and you on the piano and just with papers in our hands.
I don't say piano. I say the instrument I play.
The instrument you play. Okay.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
All right. Just strip back and for people to just just to do it together. And
it was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's become, it's like, oh, the church I worship at, the school I teach, the instrument I play.
The job I, like I that. May or may not have.
After this, right?
Yeah.
So it's really great. So yeah, I know that there may be, you know, there's lots that we can change and adjust and all of that. But the idea of saying, you know what? What does it mean to have self-efficacy and ownership and say, regardless of what environment I'm in, I have an opportunity because I'm grateful. I'm grateful I'm alive. I'm grateful I get to do this. Instead of I have to, I get to. And that's not just for chapel. That's an attitude of gratitude. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean Acor in his Harvard talk on TED, the Happy Secret to Better Work, he talks about the power of gratitude and what the science is really showing when you live a life of gratefulness and gratitude. And what does it look like to say, I actually get to do this, mm-hmm. right? And I get to help be a, like you said, a co-creator of my environment. And so whatever environment I'm in, I'm going to bring all of me to the table.
And that's exactly, to round out this little chat about chapel, is what you've done. There have been a couple times earlier in the year, and you were part of a music team singing. You were helping to lead some of the singing. Mm. And this is compliment to you, and it's not about the show. It's not about spectacle. Mm. We've been very skeptical.
Skeptical.
Skeptical. Okay, I got to say that again. We've been rather skeptical of that, but there's an authenticity that you were bringing yourself and something that was very honest and open and vulnerable, and students noticed that because we do have a lot of spectacle here. I mean, I think that's just something we've wrestled with is we can't manufacture this, and when we do, it flops, just doesn't connect,
right?
And there have been moments, and again, this is testament to the God you proclaim, that through you and through the passion that, I mean, I think our listeners, it's quite obvious, you can hear it in our podcast, you brought into a couple of our chapel contexts. So thank you, and you're part of good work here, and God is at work. We can see that. It's evident.
Thank you.
Well, we always ask every interview, and it's actually one of my favorite questions. Sometimes we get some. This is sometimes the craziest answers that we get come from this question.
But, okay.
Well, who do you read, or who are you listening to nowadays? Maybe podcasts, reading. What's coming into Ron Maitland's head?
There's so much, and so I'm involved in social entrepreneurship, and so a lot of things I'm listening to, reading, and people specifically in many of those environments when it comes to leadership and social entrepreneurship. But very specifically, we talked about qideas.org is a great website because. That particular site is where it's Gabe Lyons, and he talks about the seven channels of cultural influence. Some people call it the seven mountains. Some people think they're eight. I don't know what the right number is, but just the idea of what does it mean to again join God in every area, so that we are bringing that love light and shifting atmospheres. So Q Ideas has articles and podcasts and all those things there. I'm listening to a lot of Erwin McManus right now. He's one of my favorite guys out of L.A. I went to his church in Mosaic, which is literally right on Rodeo Drive in Hollywood. And so a lot of the people that we see on the TV and in the movies and our music is there. So I'm listening to a lot of him and how he's connecting with and relating to and the friendships and relationships. Listen to a lot of that as far as a podcast. Another podcast I listen to is Bethel Music and Chris Viatum, Bill Johnson, Sean Bolts. And just the idea of listening to hearing God. One of the things I want to do is I don't want to live a life like that is based on my talent or ability or gifting. I really want people to experience God's love, light, and wholeness through me. And so I don't want myself to be the limit. I want that to be. And so listening to people that are doing some of those things may help. I'm reading a book called The Go-Giver again for the probably seventh or eighth time. The Go-Giver is a short little book. I'm reading a lot of FBI books for some reason. Not on the FBI, but about but just how they, because FBI, a lot of the stuff that they had to do is really like it's life and death. Like it's now. They can't live in the theoretical or philosophical world. It either works or it doesn't. So I read a book called The Light Switch that one of my mentors recommended, just about relating to people. I read another book called Never Split the Difference, Chris Voss. He does a lot of stuff when it comes to negotiating. Reading Dare to Lead right now, Brené Brown and her work, right? her new book, Visible Learning for Literacy, John Hattie. One of the things I learned, it's a question you didn't ask, but what have you learned since being here? Well, maybe you did ask. What have you learned since being here? I learned how much I don't know. I'm serious. I've been doing this 26 years, and I feel like, honestly, I feel like I got some stuff, and I walked into this environment, and I'm like, I have so much to learn. And so I'm like, I feel like a brand new student all over again. I'm staying up many hours late night and I'm reading stuff like Visible Learning for Literacy, just that whole idea of making your learning visible. I'm rereading The Power of Moments by the Heath Brothers. And that's an amazing book about moments, because I tend to go through so much of my world not paying attention and not celebrating the moments that either God does or that are right in front of me. And so I'm rereading that book by the Stanford guys on that.
Maybe we should have asked, what aren't you reading?
It's true. I, like many of you, like to read a bunch at the same time. So those are just some of them.
Yeah, rivaling. Well, did we ask Tim Cavey what he's reading? Another colleague, former episode, I think he only talked about digital citizenship, but he's a guy who's like 9-10 books on the go. You've definitely topped that for sure.
Yeah. So that's just some of the stuff that I'm listening to and reading right now. There's one other one that's really important to me, because I have, as I mentioned before, just someone in grade six, and my kids are in grade six and grade four. And so Bill Johnson released a new book called Intentional, called Raising Giant Killers. Raising Giant Killers. It's all about raising kids. And I'm trying to learn more about leadership these days and teaching, not simply from leadership and teaching world, but actually parenting. just what does it mean to actually parent? And so Bill Johnson, that new book about raising giant killers, because that goes back to, and initially you said, what does it mean to come back into the Christian environment again? And that, my heart, is to, like we said, raise an army of change makers, not just people that want to get good grades, not just people that just want to get a good job and have 2.3 kids. What does it mean to have join God in this army of people that will, this army of love and light, this army of love and wholeness? And so this idea of parenting and just being, not just raising them, but them raising us. Them teaching us, and what does that look like? That's some of the stuff I'm reading right now.
Yeah,
I have one more thing. I really meant to say this, and it was the prayer we talked about, chapel, and I ended the chapel that I spoke at with this prayer, because this actually is one I'm using. This I've used it in my class. I mean, in our family, we say it regularly, or we bring it up regularly, and it's just, I just learned it last year in a book I haven't read called The Eternal Current by Aaron Nequist. I haven't read the book at all. I'm going to. But it's just—it's called A Prayer for Every Moment. You can find it. I saw it on InstaSnap, and it's something that it's a prayer that I want myself, my family, and all of us to. It helps me. I'll just say it that way. Yeah. So this is just a prayer for every moment. I need this, and it's something we've been using in our family. Just, I don't know how far back I go, but a prayer for every moment. Loving God, who fills the universe, this entire room, myself, and everyone in it, please help me to notice what you are doing in me and in the other person, and join that good work. Amen. Amen. So if that could be like the wrap up, or that could be like the summary of everything, like everything I wanted to say, everything I wanted us to be this interview about, everything I want is summarized really in that one prayer.
Ron, thank you so much for sharing. I feel like your passion and enthusiasm is just exceeding all past. Not many of you guests, and you can let Irvin Duick know that one. Sure, yeah. So thank you for joining us. It really was a pleasure. Just to wrap it up here, if you're listening here, either you've made it to episode 21, which we thank you for, or you just tuned in for Ron, and we're glad that you're here. If you want to hear more, you're going to want to hit the subscribe button so you're notified of more episodes when they drop. And in addition, if you enjoyed today's episode, you're going to want to give us a 5-star review on whatever app you listen to podcasts on. If you want to get in contact with us, the best way to do that is on Twitter, which is @notmanyofyou. And if you're looking for show notes, resources, former episodes, our website is notmanyofyou.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.